now.
I don't know who he is behind that mask of his, but I do know when we need him. And we need him now.
I'll call him, sir.
For some reason, the cool bars in Hollywood have to be hard to find and have no sign.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
It's the Cocktail Nation with Coop Cooper, back on the radio broadcasting from the Sydney Penthouse. This week we talk about the great jazz artist Vince Guaraldi. Some of you might remember him as the guy that did the Peanuts cartoon theme. Well, he was a whole lot more than that. So we'll check out his life, talk to an author who's written a book all about his wonderful life. Got some news from across the globe and the best parties to attend with lots of things to include in the diary for you. And let's kick off with some brand new music. This just arrived for me. I've got it in my hot little hands right now. The latest one from Adam Small. It's called Out of the Blue, a brand new jazz track. And this song is called Blues to Use. New music to the Cocktail Nation.
Thanks to ultraswank.net.
I was born a single law. I have said to romance, no go. Thought maybe I'm missing out. Kept seeing couples all about. Decided I'd try it, then I invited you home. You keep coming back for more. I keep telling you love's a bore. You said I was just your type. Thought it was only for a night. It's cool being single, don't mingle with you. That was the end of me. That was the end of me. That was the end of me. When you came through my door, I don't get a moment's rest. 'Cause baby, you're such a pest. You may think that it's sublime. I'm certain love's a waste of time. Don't get the idea, I wanna see you again. That was the end of me. That was the end of me. That was the end of me. end of me. When you came through my just call it quits, 'cause romance is just a pit. Girls keep asking me my name, I tell you I feel just the same. I don't want the numbers, I'd rather slumber alone. 'Cause that was the end of me, that was the end of me, that was the end of me. When you came through my door, came through my door.
Cocktail Nation, Robert Hicks and Pete Rugolo teaming up there with That Was the End of Me. This week on the show, we are talking about the great jazz artist by the name of Vince Guaraldi. Derek Bang is a journalist and author. He's put this book together. It's a wonderful book. You're going to absolutely love this because here's a guy that not many of us really know a whole lot about. His name is Vince Guaraldi. Vince Guaraldi at the Piano is the book, and he joins me on the line tonight. Great to have you on the show.
And I appreciate the fact that you've given me this opportunity to chat about the Northern California jazz pianist who was known as Dr. Funk or the Italian Leprechaun, depending on who was doing the talking. And it's true. I apologize for the fact that I didn't catch up with your show much sooner than this, but I've been in seventh heaven ever since, as I've trolled through all of the older episodes. It's been a blast.
Tell me a little bit about Vince's life, because a lot of people know him as the guy that did the music for the Peanuts, but there's much more. In fact, I didn't actually make that connection initially when I first started playing his music, so I'm glad, I suppose, that I came across him just for music's sake.
That's probably a function of, to a degree, his U.S. origins. I imagine here in the States, most people who didn't know who he was already were first exposed to his music in December 1965 when A Charlie Brown Christmas aired on network television for the very first time. But of course, he had already had a very active and successful recording career for several years prior to that, most notably in 1963 when he won a Grammy Award for the instrumental hit Cast Your Fate to the Wind, which had been released on his 1962 album, Jazz Impressions of Black Orpheus. And prior to that, he had made his bones, I believe is the phrase that jazz cats like to use, by working with Cal Chater in several groups and Woody Herman with two different incarnations of his Thundering Herds in the 1950s. So Guaraldi paid his dues, and like you hear about so many so-called overnight sensations, you know, a lot of people listening to Cast Your Fate on the radio for the first time in 62 or 63 probably thought to themselves, wow, where's this guy been hiding his light all this time? Well, fact of the matter was, he'd been very busy for the entire 10-year period prior to that.
Certainly a marvelous musician, there's no doubt about that. Clearly very talented, playing with a lot of people. But I imagine he was a fairly low-profile kind of guy.
To a degree, that's true. Later in life, in particular, once he had a steady income rolling in as a result of the music that he was producing for all of the annual Charlie Brown Peanut specials, Guaraldi no longer had to tour, and he tended to stay very close to his home in the San Francisco area. For the most part, the club gigs that he did were just within that radius, places he could drive to without too much time involved from his home base. He famously discussed what it was like to tour with Woody Herman's group back in the 1950s, and one can easily appreciate why that was something he wasn't necessarily in a hurry to go back and do again. He talked about the fact that they'd arrive just in time to set up for a gig and play for the entire evening and then fall into bed exhausted and get up at the crack of dawn the next morning before spending 8, 9, 10 hours in the car to get to the next gig. And they'd be doing this 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 nights in a row, and then maybe on the 11th or 12th night they'd get one day off, and you know, then they'd do it again. It was just, it had to have been bone-crushing, soul-draining. And yet, of course, as we know, listening to the records that were made live from such performances, a lot of great music was heard on the road at that point in time.
Hmm. Was he the sort of guy that, you know, might appear on like the Johnny Carson show or something like that? Was he that sort of high profile or not really?
Not at all. In fact, one of the things that his fans lament the most is the relative scarcity of any video footage that shows him. He never did any national talk shows. He appeared with Cal Tjader's quintet a couple of times in the 1950s on a TV show called Stars of Jazz. The first time it was only a Los Angeles-based show, and so you only would have seen it if you lived in Los Angeles. The second time the show was picked up and syndicated on the ABC network, but even so, it wasn't a program that a lot of people watched. And that was pretty much his biggest exposure, except for in the immediate San Francisco area. His friend and mentor, San Francisco Chronicle jazz critic Ralph Gleason, had a TV series that was an occasional feature on Channel 9, KQED in San Francisco, called Jazz Casual, which was exactly what it sounds like. It was a half-hour showcase for jazz musicians who were touring through San Francisco. Generally, Gleason would find out about these folks coming through, say, doing a 2, 3, 4 week gig at the Blackhawk or the Trident or someplace like that, and he'd make arrangements for them to come down to the KQED studios to tape a 30-minute show where they discussed their music a little bit, but mostly just played it. And Garaldi and his trio were on that show twice, and then they also were featured in a three-part series, 30 minutes a crack, 90 minutes total, called Anatomy of a Hit, where Gleason attempted to go back and discuss exactly what had led to the creation and marketing and ultimate success of Garaldi's hit Cast Your Fate to the Wind. But there again, these shows aren't readily available on DVD to this day. They're very hard to come by.
And when it comes to his recording library, I mean, for many fans of the Cocktail Nation, they just, you know, love collecting music. How much stuff out there is there of his work? Was he a prominent studio guy for his own material?
Sadly, no. This is sort of a good news, bad news situation. The good news is that every single album he ever recorded for Fantasy Records has remained in print ever since they were first issued in the 1950s and 60s. And I'm not just talking about the stuff he did under his own name as leader, but also the stuff that he did with Cal Tjader and a variety of other people that he supported as a sideman. They've never gone out of print. They were translated to CD as soon as that medium became popular, and they're pretty easy to come by. The bad news is that that still limits us to about a dozen of his own albums and perhaps a dozen more that aren't too hard to find where he's supporting other people, and then the pickings get very difficult. The sad truth is that the last album he made himself was the third album on his three-album contract for Warner Brothers, which was Almaville, released in 1970, as I recall. And although he died young in 1976, he never made another album during the final 6 years of his life. And that's one of the great mysteries. Mm. We all wonder why not.
When it comes to the Peanuts story, how is he discovered? How did this come about?
Well, the secret behind that is an oft-told story by Lee Mendelson, who was the director-producer of all of the Peanuts TV specials. When he decided to dabble into Charles Schulz's universe and make a TV special, he knew he wanted a jazz score. And he first got in touch with folks such as Cal Tjader and Dave Brubeck, both of whom turned him down. And Mendelson was driving across the Golden Gate Bridge one day, and he was listening to a jazz radio show. And there were a lot of jazz radio shows to listen to in the early 1960s, and what should come on the radio but Cast Your Fate to the Wind? So as soon as Mendelson could get off the bridge and get out of the car, he hit the telephone and got in touch with Fantasy Records. They put him in touch with Garaldi, and Mendelson made the pitch. What would you think about writing music for Charlie Brown? And Garaldi thought that would be a great idea. And here comes the cool part.
Yeah.
So a couple of weeks go by, right? And then Mendelson gets a call one day, and it's Garaldi on the other end of the phone, and he says, I got something I want to play for you. I got to play it for you right now. And
yeah.
Mendelson says, okay, fine. Let me come down to the studio, and I'll listen to it. And Garaldi says, no. I can't wait. I'm afraid I might forget it. And we, you know, to sidebar that comment, I mean, it sounds funny in and of itself, but the fact of the matter was that Garaldi did not read or write music.
Right, okay.
Very true. The way he kept things for his own use, or, you know, his library, he would record things. He would, you know, record himself on a reel-to-reel tape recorder, and obviously he must not have had it going at this particular moment. So Mendelson finally says, okay, fine, go ahead and play it. And what Garaldi played over the phone that day was the rough version of Linus and Lucy, which is best known these days as the Peanuts' main theme. And Mendelson will swear today, all these years later, that at that moment he knew that he had found the final perfect element for what would be an ideal musical marriage between character and sound for the Peanuts universe. And Mendelson knew at that point that they weren't just going to have a one-off show. They were going to have a franchise.
Yeah.
And he was right.
Now, Mendelson was, I think, he saw him just before he died, didn't he?
Yeah. This is another sad thing. Again, in hindsight, Garaldi had been complaining of stomach pains leading up to the night when he finally had a heart attack and died. And there's some question now as to whether it was actually a heart attack or something that had simply gone undiagnosed, and we really don't know. I mean, his death certificate cites heart attack as the cause of death, and it's kind of difficult to armchair quarterback and go back and argue with that all these years later. But yes, he and Mendelson had lunch, I believe it was the day before. Garaldi died on a Sunday evening, literally in between sets at Butterfield's, the club where he was performing at that particular point in time. And Garaldi had mentioned during that meal with Mendelson that he wasn't feeling too good, and he thought he should probably go see a doctor, and never made it.
Yeah. He was only 47 years old, wasn't he?
Very young. Isn't that awful?
Unbelievable. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you, too, was with your book, was it a difficult proposition to find out a lot of information about the man? This is something I'm always interested in when I talk to authors who've written about an identity, because I can't imagine how much work goes into something like this.
Well, it's an excellent question, and it was actually a project that I resisted doing for years. I had put up a very modest website talking about Garaldi in the mid-1990s, and I kept waiting for somebody else to write a book. You know, I figured it would come from the inside. It would be a musician, you know, maybe one of the sidemen, one of the bassists or drummers who had worked with him back in the day, and it didn't happen, and it didn't happen, and it didn't happen. And, you know, the clock keeps spinning, and we move into the new century, and we're midway through the first decade of the new century. And I don't remember who it was, but some real famous jazz musician died, and it kind of brought me up short. And I thought, you know, the window's closing on being able to chat with the people who would have had firsthand experience with Garaldi. So it was literally a case of, well, you know, I've been waiting for more than 10 years for somebody else to do it. And I mean, I am a journalist, so I thought I may as well embrace the task myself. And you're right. It was both, again, good news, bad news. The good news was Garaldi's mother had lovingly kept a scrapbook of early newspaper clippings every time her son appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle or the Oakland Tribune. And Garaldi's son, David, very kindly made those available for me to look at. So that was a great start. The other great piece of good fortune that I encountered was that a lot of the people who had played with him, even back in the 50s, were still around, were still performing, and in fact, many of them were still living in and around the San Francisco area. And I lived near Sacramento, which is only about an hour and a half away, so it wasn't just that it was easy to go chat with them. I could go drive and, you know, literally sit and listen to them. I think the best time I had was with Colin Bailey, because he had his drum kit always set up in his apartment, and every once in a while, in the middle of something he'd be talking about, he'd, you know, scuttle over and demonstrate it for me.
Yeah. When it came to the man himself, did you ever get a chance to see him perform or meet him?
Oh, no. I wish it were otherwise. I came to university at UC Davis in Davis, which is just outside Sacramento in California, in 1973, graduated in 77. I found out later that Garaldi had actually performed on the UC Davis campus the previous year, 1972, before I got here.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was already a fan, and I knew that he played regularly in San Francisco. And I figured, well, you know, the man's only in his 40s. There's no hurry. And I didn't have a car, so it wasn't easy for me to get to San Francisco at that point in time. And then he died on me.
Yeah.
You know, you're not supposed to play woulda, coulda, shoulda games, but man, if I had that one to do over again. So no, I never saw him live.
Yeah.
It just kills me.
Yeah. Your story is very similar to other people I've spoken to who have written books about various musical identities, popular culture identities, who have been waiting for a book, and then it just never came. So they went, darn it, I'll just do it myself. You know, I've heard that story so many times.
Well, and of course, the hope there is that those of us who make that decision want to do justice to the subject, of course. And one of the reasons that I got in touch with you specifically, paying attention to the musical focus of your show and its occupation with the wonderful lounge and swinging scene of the 1960s, is that one of the things I wanted to make clear in the book that I did on Garaldi was that he was much more than just the guy who did the Peanuts stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the things he does not get enough credit for was the fact that he was very instrumental in helping make the bossa nova sound that swept through the United States in the early 1960s as popular as it was.
Yeah.
As a direct result of Castrofe to the Wind and the album on which it appeared, which included his interpretations of the Antonio Carlos Jobim Louis Bonfa soundtrack to the film Black Orpheus.
Yeah.
And even the Peanuts songs, you know, if you can divorce yourself from the fact that they are tunes written for Charlie Brown and Snoopy and just try to listen to them absent that reference, they're all bossa nova songs.
Yeah, yeah.
They're classic bossa nova compositions and very, very 1960s. I just love them. You cannot listen to his music without smiling.
Yeah. The book Vince Garaldi at the Piano, available through Amazon and all major places where you can pick up books, and of course through McFarlandBooks.com, you can grab it there. Derek, thanks so much for your time. It's been a marvellous insight into the man. I only probably started playing his music a little while ago, and it's marvellous to learn about a man that I'll be playing a whole lot more of. We're going to play Cast Your Fate to the Wind, of course, tonight. Thanks so much for your time. Good to talk to you.
I appreciate the opportunity, Coop. You have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
With Coop Cooper, Nathan Haynes, and Cocktails. Now, I've got some great news on the website, cocktailnation.net. We're going to find lots of great things. We've got the Life in the Penthouse articles. We've got the World of Swing gig guide and news from across the world. Various articles that I collate during the week and put up on the website. Here's some interesting stories about the last remaining survivor of the Hindenburg has just died. And he died in his late 90s. Incredible story about this fella, how he managed to get out of the Hindenburg. And I've got to do a whole lot more research on this event. You know a little bit about it, but didn't know that there were survivors of this thing. Literally, he was a lucky guy because some water fell on him. I think he was working in the kitchen at the time. And he managed to tumble out of the thing. Incredible stuff. So check this out. Last remaining survivor of the Hindenburg dies is the name of that story. And how about a record player without a needle? Isn't the digital age amazing? You'll love this bit of equipment, which I'm sure will probably become mainstream at the moment. It's being used to dub in lots and lots of records for remastering and whatnot. But this is an amazing piece of technology. So check those stories out. It's Carol Friedette now, and You Better Go Now on the Cocktail Nation.
You better go now, because I like you much too much. You have a way with you. You ought to know now just why I like you very much. The night was gay with you. There's the moon above, and it gives my heart a lot of swing. In your eyes, there's love, and the way I feel, it must be spring. I want you so now. You have the lips I love to You better go now. You better go, because I like you much too much. You better go, because I like you much too much.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
I used to visit all the very gay places, those come what may places, where one relaxes on the axis of the wheel of life to get the feel of life from jazz and cocktails. The girls I knew had sad and sullen gray faces with distant gay traces that used to be there. You could see where they'd been washed away by too many through the day. 12 o'clock tales. Then you came along with your siren of song to tempt me to madness. I thought for a while that your poignant smile was tinged with the sadness of a great love for me. Ah, yes, I was wrong again. I was wrong. Life is lonely again, and only last year everything seemed so sure. Now life is awful again, a trawful of heart could only be a bore. A week in Paris will ease the bite of it. All I care is to smile in spite of it. I'll forget you, I will, while yet you are still burning inside my brain. Romance is mush, stifling those who strive. I'll live a lush life in some small dive, and there I'll be while I rot with the rest of those whose lives are lonely too.
Broadcasting from the Sydney Penthouse, the Lounge Lothario, Coop Cooper.
exotica, and spy jazz. It's the Cocktail Nation with Coop Cooper.
With Coop Cooper and Robert Drazen there with Tahitian Dreams. It's all thanks to ultraswank.net. While you do head over to ultraswank.net, do check out a great little blog by Amy Thur that she's written there. And it's all about the Jetsons. I don't know about you, but growing up, I just absolutely loved the Jetsons. It was a promise that I thought would come true. Sadly, no jetpacks, no flying cars, although I would dispute both influences being safe for our society, because quite frankly, we haven't really mastered driving on the road just yet. So the last thing we probably want is flying cars crashing into houses. And could you imagine those 21-year-olds driving around in their hotted-up flying cars? Bound to be a disaster. The topic is, are we ready for the Jetsons yet? Do check it out over on ultraswank.net. Lots of great articles there as well, but that's a particularly good one that I wanted to mention that Amy Thur has written. Well, spring has arrived here in Sydney. Finally, 1st of September is the official date for spring here in Australia, which probably will surprise many of my American friends going, what? Nah, that's not the weather here. Well, that's when it is officially. More practically, it's around the 2021st. Of course, this all depends on astrological, astronomical, astronomical things. Astrological. It's got nothing to do with the zodiac. Astronomical things as to when it officially is here. So around the 2021st is officially when spring is here. But the great thing is, here in Sydney, we've got beautiful temperatures. I would say our temperatures are probably similar to those of my friends in California. We have similar sort of weather. So it's predominantly nice most of the time. I mean, probably the coldest it got in wintertime here would barely rate on the radar in other parts of Australia. Get much, much colder. So beautiful temperatures right now. So the top down is on the convertible of some cruise Sydney streets, which is nice. No point having a convertible if you can't put the top down. Let's take a look at the world of swank now, thanks to pastimealbumclocks.com. Plenty of gigs up on the website, and I do put them up every single couple of days. If you do have a gig that's perhaps your band is putting on, maybe you're promoting, that you'd like me to push on the radio show and on the website, I'd love to hear from you. For those here in Australia, Deniliquin Collectors Car Club have got their annual spring rally September 20 and 21 over the Edward River Memorial Park in Deniliquin. It's going to be a stack of classic cars there and swap sites available as well. Weekend at Sinatra's coming up December 12. We've got the Martini Kings teaming up with Buddy Greco. That is going to be absolutely huge. A weekend at Sinatra's.com is the website. October 22nd, Jennifer Keith is playing over at the Carpenter Performing Arts Centre in Long Beach, California. And also there on the 24th as well. September 28th, the third annual Tiki Day, the unofficial theme day at Disneyland. Jack Crosley's Lost World is on a Tuesday, the second Tuesday of every month, 8 p.m. till 9:30. And you can see him at Otto's Shrunken Head, 538 East 14th Street in New York City. The end of the year, Mod Palm Springs, October 10, mod-palmsprings.com. On a Thursday, it's Otto's Grotto. You can make the hip scene. And this is always a fantastic night, Forbidden Island Alameda. These gigs and lots more on the net, cocktailnation.net. Here's Tony Mottola and San Jose on the Cocktail Nation. Thank you.
Is like a never-ending melody. Poets have compared it to a symphony. A symphony conducted by the lighting of the moon. But our song of love is slightly out of tune. Once your kisses raised me to a fever pitch. Now the orchestration doesn't seem so rich. Seems to me you've changed the tune we used to sing. Like the bossa nova, love should swing. We used to harmonize, two souls in perfect time. Now the song is different and the words don't even rhyme. 'Cause you forgot the melody our hearts would always croon. And so what good's a heart that's slightly out of tune? Your heart to mine, the way it used to be. Join with me in harmony and sing a song of loving. We're bound to get in tune again. Before too long, there'll be no desinfernale when your heart belongs to me completely. Then you won't be slightly out of tune. You'll sing along with me.
Hello there.
I couldn't help noticing that these are your clothes.
What if they are?
I know you have a headache, but don't take it out on me. I mean, what should I do with these?
Just throw them anywhere. I won't be needing them till morning.
The Cocktail Nation. Music for your bachelor pad.
Cocktail Nation, Coop Cooper with Tiki Lounge Crew and Bikini Bambini. I've been working with my my old neighbour Kramer on a Eurospy special. That's going to be coming up in the coming weeks. We've put together something which is going to be extending for about a year. So many movies to talk about. So many spy flicks were Euro spies. So more on that and Kramer's wacky sense of humour coming your way in the coming shows. Looking forward to that. It's always a pleasure to talk to my old neighbour Kramer. I think I've told the story about Kramer, how he lived opposite me and always seemed to be knocking on the door looking for something like sugar, things like that. So we nicknamed him Kramer at the time. Next week on the show, talking to Carrie Handler about a little thing called Polly High. Going to leave you with the new Gary Burton Quartet. Did you get it? Stay happy.